Welcome to Kin Folklore. We're excited to be back to share our love for one of our favorite stories. This season, we will be returning to the world of Westeros.
Woo!
And the Dance of the Dragons has begun. We'll be diving into all the treachery between Team Green and Team Black. I'm Andrea.
And I'm Paul. And for our returning listeners, you'll know that we're cousins who started this podcast because we love to talk about fantasy and sci-fi shows. In the past, we've covered His Dark Materials, The Witcher, Avatar The Last Airbender, The Legend of Korra, Lovecraft Country, Three Body Problem. This list is getting long and extensive, and we've loved every moment of it. You know what, though? There's no world like a Westeros world, so we are back to talk about dragons and swords and horses.
Where we live. We live in dragons, swords, and horses land.
Yes.
Love those. In this episode, we're going to be talking about the upcoming season of The House of the Dragon. We'll talk a little bit about our burning questions from the end of last season and note some important Westerosi history. There will be spoilers from Game of Thrones.
As always.
And season one of The House of the Dragon. And we'll discuss some of the interviews from the cast and crew in the main podcast. But for our book readers, stick around for the end, because we're going to talk a little bit about spoilers.
And Kin Folklore will have adult content. If you're ready for it to get spicy like only a Westerosi party in a brothel can, you've come to
the bowels of a pleasure house.
You've come to the right place for all the steamy and twisted drama as twisted as the Targaryen family tree or Kristen Cole's code of ethics. Let's go! All right, so King Viserys has died. Let's start there, okay? He is gone. I mean, it only took a whole season and his body completely decomposing down to a skeleton, but it did happen.
Poor Vizzy T.
I know. It's
poor
rough.
Vizzy T.
It's rough.
I already miss him.
I do too. It's gonna be a different season without him. But we do have Alicent and Otto. What a consolation prize. And the rest of the small council. R.I.P. Lord Beesbury. Pour out a little liquor. That's what we gotta do. They've installed Aegon the Elder on the throne. Rhaenyra finds out from Princess Rhaenys that this has happened, immediately goes into labor and delivers a stillborn daughter who she names Visenya. Harbinger of things to come, we shall see. Otto arrives on Dragonstone and offers terms to which our boy is like, our boy David Targaryen is not pleased. He has some choice words.
I would rather feed my sons to a dragon
then have them serve your drunken cunt of a king. Oh man, it's so good. Rhaenyra can keep Dragonstone. Luke can be the heir to Hightide, and Viserys and Aegon the Younger will have a place at court.
Basically, they're going to take Daemon and Rhaenyra's kids and keep them as hostages.
Yeah.
Who would take this?
Nobody. It's a terrible deal.
Who would take this?
Horrible deal.
Rhaenyra is considering the offer. And, you know, she wants to just see what the support is like out in Westeros. So she sends Jason Luke to treat with her allies, or her believed allies. Jace to the Riverlands to meet Lord Grover Tully. Been waiting for him for a minute.
It's wild.
Can't wait to meet the Tully family. We got Kermit,
Grover,
and Elmo.
And Elmo. Shouts to Elmo Tully.
Also, Jace is also to go to the Eyrie to meet with Lady Jane Arryn, who is a cousin of Rhaenyra's through her mother, Emma, and to the north to meet with Lord Craegan Stark. She sends Luke to Storm's End to meet with Lord Boros Baratheon. It's just, you know, it's a quick little flight. She figures that's pretty safe. But when Luke gets to Storm's End, he has not only been rebuked by Lord Boros, but then he and his dragon Arax are chased by Aemon Targaryen and Vhagar. After being provoked by Arax, Vhagar eats both Luke and Arax. And that's how we end the season, with Rhaenyra getting that horrible, horrible news.
And stares into the camera with daggers and flames in her eyes. She's ready. She's pissed. As it would be. I mean,
it's like truly horrible, right? Like rewatching this episode, you're just like, so she lost three immediate family members in a span of a day or two.
Yeah, it's a rough week. So what are we looking for in season two? What are we looking forward to? What do we want to see?
So now that Team Green has killed a member of Team Black, I think this goes to war.
Yeah, for like, sure.
I think we're about to see a very bloodthirsty Daemon.
Yes, for sure.
Perhaps a bloodthirsty Rhaenyra. And you know what? Corlys and Rhaenys consider Luke and Jace and Joffrey to be their grandchildren.
Yeah.
So Team Velaryon and Team Targaryen, the Blacks, it's going to be on and popping.
I agree.
We have our little, let's go to the painted table and look at where things are at in terms of who has what support.
Well, I think you named a couple for Team Black. They got Velaryon. They got Keltigar. They got Staunton, Massey, probably Darklyn and Duskendale. I don't know. Bar Aemon, I think, is another one. And then you said you're not sure about, we talked a little bit, you're not sure about Stokeworth. What's your thoughts about Stokeworth? You think they're going for the Blacks or they're staying with the Greens?
I mean, it would make sense for Stokeworth to be. So most of these families are Crownland families, right? Mm-hmm. And the Crownlands is that area around King's Landing where these families live. You know, you got three Velaryon families, the Targaryens, the Velaryons, and the Keltigars. Stokeworth, the only reason I have a question mark after Stokeworth is because I believe there was a Stokeworth who got locked up by Team Green in episode 9. Mm-hmm. And I think ended up bending the knee. I'm going to be honest with you. When the Maester at Dragonstone list all the support they have, Stokeworth's not there. So either they haven't heard from them yet, or they just, like, they're not, they haven't declared yet. So question mark for House Stokeworth. These, except for the Velaryons, these are pretty small houses.
Yeah.
You know, like, we're talking, these are not big houses. There's a lot of them, but they're essentially like the bannermen of Dragonstone. Like this is not a big, like some of these houses can probably muster a few hundred men. We're not talking about like the many thousands at the Aerie or the North can muster. Like these are small houses. So there's a lot more of them for Team Black, but they're not very big.
I mean, in contrast, on the Green side, it's safe to say House Baratheon is going to have to roll with the Greens after letting their child get eaten. That's going to happen. Let's go House Hightower and House Lannister. Also interesting that House Baratheon is now with a Targaryen house. I mean, either way, like it seems like they've chosen the Green side, but either way, last time that there was, you know, major like Aegon's conquest, you know, House Baratheon and House Targaryen were united. So they came here and conquered the Westeros together. So it's interesting. I'm going to see how that goes. We'll see how that goes with Baratheon, House Baratheon. So long, twisted, sordid history with them and the Velaryons.
Yeah. I mean, we shouldn't understand. I want to just correct myself. I don't want to like pretend that House Velaryon is not a big get.
Yeah, it is.
It's one of the biggest gets, right? Because they have basically the largest navy in Westeros. The Lannisters also have a fleet, but it's not the same. It's not comparable. So that's some strength on Team Black. But let's be honest, like Team Green has some really wealthy houses. They've got House Lannister, House Hightower. Like those are probably two of them at this time in history. Those are two of the most wealthy houses in Westeros.
I'd venture to say, though, that if House Baratheon came over to Team Black, this is a short war. This is a real short war. Like, honestly, like in my, it may, I feel like that that would have swung the balance of power. So I do think you're right. Like having that split, those three houses are pretty substantially strong. If they just kept those three and nobody else, those are pretty strong houses to be allied with for sure.
All yeah. Three of them. Totally.
And we have our boy is also going to go meet with the Vale and the North. So, I mean, up for grabs, House Arryn, House Stark, House Tyrell. I think Tyrell's going to go on greens. I don't know. That's my fear feeling. Maybe I'm wrong.
Does it matter?
It doesn't matter.
The flippy floppiest house in all of Westeros. Oh, we're with Renly. Oh no, we're with Stannis. Oh no, we're with Joffrey. I mean,
they did what they had to do. They did what they had to do to survive. And
Margaery's betrothed to more men in Westeros than like if she had just gone on Tinder and started swiping. What the hell? I mean, obviously, House Tyrell is a very important family because they're in one of the most profitable parts of Westeros. But I'm not holding my breath for these guys. Can you really trust them?
No, I love that House Stark is even being considered. It's almost like, let's consider them. But they're going to take a long-ass time to get here, man. They're far away. Like,
really,
but this war is popping. Like, by the time they get over here, like, it's... And the Vale is not so close either. So, I don't know, man. Those are two houses. You got to go get them. But it's going to take a while for them to get here.
Well, I have a question for you. Do you know the King's Road is finished at this point? I would assume so, right? Because Jaehaerys got to the King's Road fairly early in his reign, but we're talking about building a road system where there wasn't one.
Yeah, I'm wondering. I gotta think that the King's Road is built. Like, I'm thinking about it from Fire and Blood. Like you said, Jaehaerys like started building it in his reign, and now where he probably did that before he died. And yeah, he probably did. I can't remember from Fire and Blood. I'll go back in so we can have that ready for like next episode. But I think so. I think it's done by this point. It's got to be done by this point.
All right. So like, let's say it takes Jace. Okay, so from the book, it takes a couple weeks to get to Winterfell, even on Dragonpath.
Yeah.
So let's say it takes Jace, after he stops in the Aerie, like another week or so to get to Winterfell. If they start getting it together right away, it will probably take them about a year.
Yeah. Yeah.
Probably take them about a year to get to King's Landing. And if that's where they need to go. Now, if they're just going to the Riverlands, obviously, like, the Riverlands, for folks who don't remember from the OG show, the Riverlands is the most important part. It's because that's where all the other kingdoms kind of converge.
Yeah.
And so the Riverlands is where every war gets fought. It just is. That's just where how it is. Like, every war just kind of ends up fighting in the Riverlands. So if they just need to get to the Riverlands, maybe 6 months.
and to be honest, for that, I would probably deploy the Starks for that, because that's about where, you know, I would probably, if you had them, I would say, hey, this is where we need you to fight. You know what I mean? I think that would probably be where I would go. So,
yeah, I mean, it takes just, so the North is huge. So it's just going to take weeks even to get the word out to all the bannermen, to get all the men ready, to get supplies together. So that's what I'm saying will take months. Once they're on the road, like, you know, maybe it won't take that long, but like, it's going to take a long time. It's not like they can just call up each other or put out a tweet. Like, it's going to take a while.
Yeah, it's like, we haven't talked about strategy of this war yet, because it's not, but that would have been, and I think Daemon's thinking that way, but that would have been my strategy. I wouldn't give up Dragonstone, but almost, like, I would force the Greens out of King's Landing and out of those places and make it a shorter cut to, like, all the houses I have favor with. Like, I would literally draw them into some place like I wouldn't maybe take them to the North, a little too far, 'cause they probably wouldn't even go. But, like, I just think about what Cersei says to Joffrey in Game of Thrones. She's like, when he's like so eager, he'd go and conquer them. And this and that, she says, the North is too vast. It's too big. You couldn't conquer everybody. I would force them to fight the war on my terms in a different way, even with their dragons, and bring, if I did get the Starks on board, I would definitely use that to my advantage to pull them, have to come and fight us in the North or somewhere close to there if I was them.
I totally agree. And I think we all also know from the OJ show that the Knights of the Vale are a formidable force.
Yep.
And so I just don't think that if they can get House Stark, House Arryn together and pull the war to the Riverlands, which really sucks for House Tully, but such is life. That's where you guys are positioned. Like, I think that's a more even playing field.
Yeah.
Because the Lannisters have a lot of men. So, like, if you can pull everybody to kind of the central region of the of Westeros, and then they don't, we're going to talk about dragon math, but like, they don't have, Team Green doesn't have many dragons. So if you can pull Vhagar out of King's Landing,
yeah,
King's Landing is there for the taking.
Yeah, no, I'm, and that's where I would, use the Valyrians. I would pull them out, and I would send in the Valyrians by sea in Blackwater Bay, and that's how I would play that. But you know, we already know how this war goes, so we're all just theorizing at this point. We know.
I know it's like it's Monday morning quarterbacking, and I do think that they're gonna make some changes. I've seen some of the reviews. The reviews are good. People are feeling really strongly that this is a really good second season, but there were a few reviews that said there are some major changes, that some work and some don't. So who knows how like the actual ground war and the air war are going to play out. There are a few things I feel like have to happen. But maybe they will employ this kind of strategy of trying to pull Aemon and Vhagar out of King's Landing right away. Cause that's what I would do.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's see. But let's talk, we're talking dragons. Let's continue the dragon. So the dragon math is kind of wild. I think that it breaks down on the green side. They got Sunfire, Dreamfire, and Vhagar. And Vhagar is the only dragon that's seen battle, although a lot of fucking battle, right? Like, we know. Like, let's go down the bullets.
I do think we should know Vhagar is actually probably the mother of many of the dragons on the field. So she's fighting her own kids in some cases.
This is wild.
Isn't it crazy? Like, we don't actually have a dragon family tree. A lot of it is speculation. And it's based on what the dragons look like. But Vhagar is known to be a female dragon who lays eggs, just like Dreamfire and Syrax. And so some of these dragons are her kin.
Oof. Dang.
So that in itself is also complicated. But
did she eat like her grandchild? When she ate Arryx?
Yeah. It is like extremely possible that she was like, don't speak to your granny like that, and then just chomped away.
Oh my God. Crazy.
Yeah. So Vhagar's like over 150 years old at this point, and she is one of the three dragons that was involved in the conquest. She single-handedly bought House Stokeworth to heal just by burning their castle roof off. Like, Visenya was just like, oh, you don't want to acknowledge us? There goes your roof.
Yeah.
How about that? And, you know, I can go further if you'd like me to, but for now, let's just burn up the roof. She burned the ships of the Arryn fleet. Apparently the Arryns used to have a fleet is gone.
Wow.
Yeah, just burnt it up. She was one of the dragons that participated in the Field of Fire, which is an infamous battle where 4,000 Lannister and Gardener men died.
Yeah.
They just burnt up all these troops. It kind of, Field of Fire was the inspiration for the loot train in season 7 of Game of Thrones.
Yeah,
like, sure. They just burnt up all the troops. She helped Beleriand burn down nearly every keep in Dorne over the course of 2 years. It was just like, feeling cute today, let's go burn some castles in Dorne.
So crazy.
After Queen Rhaenys and Meraxes were killed in Dorne, Aegon the Conqueror and Visenya literally just flew to Dorne over the course of the next couple of years and burnt down almost every single keep.
Yeah. So she's been around and she's been through battles. So she's ready for this shit. And that's why it was, Arryx was like, was light work, you know, like
light work. By the time she got back to King's Landing, she probably needed another snack. Like that was no biggie to her.
Yeah.
She is a killing machine. And I think that's important to note because, you know, we'll talk more about this, but like the show is obviously telling us based on what happened in that final scene, that final fight scene between Arryx and Vhagar, the dragons have a will of their own. Well, Vhagar is basically like a killing war machine. She is not like cute dragon that like, she's not Syrax, right? Syrax yeah. like kind of likes to stay near Rhaenyra, kind of likes to chill in the, you know, in her little cave, let's lay some eggs every so often. No, this is, Vhagar is a killing machine. She's a tool of war only.
I think it's fascinating that her and Caraxes also have some history together. So
they have a lot of history together. I mean, those two dragons flew together for years mm-hmm. in multiple generations. So we'll see.
We'll see how it goes. And then the blacks. Well, we'll take your three dragons. We'll give you, you know, four or five because you got Vhagar, and we'll see that, and we'll raise you to 12. We got 12 dragons. The blacks have 12 dragons. Let's talk about who has riders. Syrax has a rider, obviously. Rhaenyra, Caraxes, Daemon, Maelys, Rhaenys, Moondancer, Baela, Vermax, Jace, Tyraxes, Joffrey, and then there's the ones with no riders, but some of them are known, and some of them are ones that we're like, dang, what happened? What they gonna do about this person's rider? So let's start with the one who, what they gonna do about this person's rider. Sea Smoke, no rider, rode off in a boat. Don't know how they're gonna fix that one. Let's see what happens.
I really don't. I have a feeling they're not gonna address this at all, but like, this is not a thing that happens in the world. Like, the dragon rider has to be dead for someone to claim someone else's dragon. Like, anyway, yeah. Poor Sea Smoke. Sea Smoke is just like looking off into the horizon. Like, when is dad coming back?
I want him back. And then we have the king and the queen's dragons, former king and queen dragon, Vermithor, old King Jaehaerys's dragon, which I believe we saw last season in the cave. And we talked about that, whether we thought that was Vermithor. And then Alysanne, Silverwing, Sheep Stealer, which is a wild dragon, and the Cannibal, also a wild dragon, and then Grey Ghost, also a wild dragon. So they got a lot of dragons. And yeah. They got a lot of allies.
And they have eggs.
And they got eggs.
Yeah. But that said, Vermithor is the only dragon other than Caraxes that they have possession of that's ever seen real war. Like, Caraxes obviously had experience in the Stepstones, mm-hmm. and Vermithor, and also, oh yes, Vermithor, Caraxes, and Vhagar all burned up a Dornish fleet together once.
We go back.
They go back to the battlefield.
Oh my gosh.
But like, Syrax never been in battle. Moondancer is a toddler, basically. I mean, obviously from the show, like, Moondancer is going to be old enough for Baela to ride from the trailers, but like, Moondancer is a young dragon. So we saw Vermax as a baby not that long ago. Mm-hmm. Tyraxes is also very young. Maelys is an older, more experienced dragon, but she's not really seen a whole lot of battle. So the greens have the advantage of having Vhagar, but the blacks have the numbers.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which of these dragons is you are you most excited to see in action?
Oh man, it's tough. I really love Silverwing.
I know. I love Silver. I just love Queen, old Queen, good Queen Alysanne. Like, she's just one of the best rulers that they've ever had in this world.
Agreed. And that's what I love about it is it really makes me think about, something that we're going to grapple with in a little bit about the will of the dragons. And her dragon is one of the dragons that actually exhibits that as well, like by not wanting to go over past a certain point and go further north beyond the wall. And also just, that was how Queen Alysanne got around and talked to many of the women of Westeros and heard what their concerns were and like spoke to Jaehaerys to like make laws that ended, oppressive ones. And I mean, granted, Westeros is not this liberated place, but it is better because she served, and it is better because of her and Silverwing. And I really want to see Silverwing. You know what I mean? Like, for sure.
Yeah. I think, I'm most hyped to see Moondancer in action, but only because I want to see Baela in action.
Yeah, I can get that. I get that. For sure.
Baela is just like, I've been a Baela stan since I first read the book. I just love Baela Targaryen. She's just like, she's just such a Targ woman. Yeah. Like, she's just such a Targ lady.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I can take any of them. Anybody on Team Black. I don't really want to see any of the Green Dragons. I don't really care. I don't care about Dreamfire. I don't care about Sunfire. I know it's like a bad take. I really do like Vhagar, even though Vhagar is terrible. I don't like him in this particular instance. I don't like her in this particular instance, but I do like her throughout the war. Like I like throughout the world. Like early Vhagar is my favorite. I like the old Kanye, like for Vhagar. You know what I mean? that's where I stand on that. Vhagar's awesome in the Conquest.
You like Vhagar with the melodies. You don't like Vhagar when she acts tough.
That's exactly it. Exactly. That's exactly right. Exactly.
I actually do want to see Dreamfire, not from a battle point of view, because I don't want Queen Helena to be in that kind of danger. She doesn't seem like the type of Targaryen lady that really wants to take flight and like burn some stuff up. But I do want to see Dreamfire for a couple of lore reasons. One is Dreamfire was written by one of my favorite Targ women, Queen Rhaena Targaryen, who was the elder sister of Jaehaerys, wife to two kings. Dreamfire was like her closest friend and confidant. She went through a lot of stuff. We don't have to go over that here, but like, Rhaena Targaryen not being queen in her own right is the first sin of the Targaryens. Like, this is why this eventually leads to the full downfall of their house, because had they not skipped over her and just let her be queen, they wouldn't have gotten into some of this murky area with Rhaenys and then Rhaenyra.
Yep.
So I want to see Dreamfire just off of that, because she's a dragon that got a lot of ink spilled in the book, but also she's the most fertile dragon that we know of. A lot of the dragons are her children. There is a lot of speculation that because she was Queen Rhaena's dragon and laid eggs on Dragonstone, and then three eggs went missing and ended up in Essos. I wonder whose eggs those could have been. That she might also be the parents of Viserion, Rhaegal, and Drogon. So I just want to see what she looks like up close, because we haven't really gotten a good glimpse of her, and supposedly she looks just like Drogon.
I mean, we're going to definitely get to see her. I guess it's just, they're making me dislike the dragons because of the people riding them. Actually, I love Helena, though.
I was going to say, who dislikes Helena Targaryen?
I like Helena. So I guess it's okay. I am not even going to front anymore. I tried. I lean very heavy Team Black. I'm sorry. Like, listen, I am... I am here for all the downfall of all the Green's plots and plans.
I've seen so many posts on social media lately that are just like, I can't wait to defend Damon and Rhaenyra's crimes. Like, yeah, people are just ready to be like, yeah, well, it's war.
So let's talk about these the will of these dragons, because I think like that's what we saw at the end of the season. That's where it left off. What do you think about that whole kind of like, okay, a dragon basically having its own will, which we've seen a few times. And what do you think it's a problem that we know Aemon's going to try to make it seem like, yeah, I did that, when he didn't really do anything?
Okay, I do think it's a problem. Okay, so here's my concern. If Aemon doesn't tell the idiots on Team Green, who are mostly Hightower adjacent and not Targ, so they're not raised in the Targaryen, in the Valyrian culture, they just know less about dragons. If Aemon doesn't say, hey, this was an accident, I actually can't fully control Vhagar. I think that has implications for Sunfire, which is Aegon's dragon, and all the, like, Dreamfire, all of the dragons. Like, Team Green might want to deploy their dragons differently if they're aware that, like Viserys said, the notion that they have control of these dragons is completely, like, a fantasy. Mm-hmm. So I worry about the people who are left on Team Green, Otto, Sir Crispy, Allison, if they don't know that Aemon cannot fully control Vhagar, they might just be like, all right, we have a problem. Vhagar, Aemon, go deal with it. Mm-hmm. But it could cause more problems for them in the future. And we can talk a little bit more in the spoiler section about how this could play out. I'm just speculating. I don't know if it will play out this way, but like, it concerns me that I believe strongly, and maybe we'll be wrong, but Aemon is going to go back to King's Landing and be like, yeah, I did it. And
yeah,
what's the problem?
Of course he will, because that is Aemon Targaryen. Of course he will do that. Like, that is who he is, like, as a person, like, because he's had to overcompensate for, you know, when he was being bullied and what he thinks. And now he's like, you know, he's going to try to act like I'm the warrior person. He wants to go. He's looking forward to fighting Daemon, which is crazy to me. Like, don't look, even if you end up fighting him, I would not look forward to fighting Daemon Targaryen. You know what I mean? Like, it's kind of crazy. Anyway.
So I guess I'm just like, what happens if, like, no one has this information but Aemon? Like, it's very, because I feel like this is the difference between Aemon and Luke. If Luke had survived that battle, he would have went home and been like, Mom, I could not control Arax.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, he would have been like, that was really terrifying. Like, the dragon was not listening. We don't know the sex of Arax, but like, let's just assume Arax is not a she dragon. But like, I feel like Luke would have told either his mom or his brother, like, or his stepfather, like, hey, this happened to me and it's kind of scary. I think Aemon is not going to tell anyone, which also means that Aegon, who has a dragon as well, isn't going to have this information. And I just think that the show could really lean into that this is actually a war between dragons and less a war between people. I hope it doesn't go that way, but it does. It is something I've been thinking about.
So what do you, yeah, I think it's going to be interesting. I mean, we have examples about when this has happened, right? So we already talked about Alysanne and Silverwing. What are some of the other examples? I know, obviously, Dany with Drogon in Game of Thrones. But there's one notable one that people don't really talk about as in detail in Fire and Blood. I think we should talk about it a little bit.
Yeah, so we talked on our, I think it was our finale episode last year, about how Dany is trying to fly Drogon back to Meereen, and Drogon keeps going back to this, like, little fortress, like, she created this little nest and called it Dragonstone. Drogon does not want to go to Meereen, and Dany cannot force Drogon to do this. It's basically a passage where, like, Dany is learning how hard it is to control a dragon. But in Fire and Blood, we have two other examples, which is Queen Alysanne and the Wall, which is, we talk about that. We've talked about it many times because it's a distinctive moment. But there's also Princess Arya, who was the daughter of Queen Rhaena, who I mentioned earlier. This is Jaehaerys's elder sister. So Princess Arya is Jaehaerys's niece. And for a while, she is heir to the Iron Throne. She is one of a set of twins, and she is the elder twin, and so she is heir to the Iron Throne. But she doesn't have a dragon. And she's also just, like, going through some stuff. Her and her mom had a really difficult relationship, basically, because they had been separated due to a war, and she didn't really know her mother super well. And in addition to that, when Jaehaerys and Alysanne start having children, she's no longer the heir, and she feels a way about that, as I think many children would. Mm-hmm. So I think she's around 12 years old. She decides that she's going to run away from home, and she jumps on the back of Balerion, the Black Dread, which just, young woman, what are we thinking? Like, yeah. What are we thinking? She takes the largest dragon, the oldest dragon, the only dragon that is from Old Valyria, and disappears for over a year. And there's a frantic search for her. Her mom is beside herself. Like, she gets on the back of Dreamfire. She literally flies to, like, half of the castles in Westeros to see if anyone's seen Princess Arya. Jaehaerys also sends out people looking for her. Everybody's concerned, not just because she's a little girl and she's, you know, the king's niece, but also because she's taken the biggest, baddest dragon in the world. And they're missing for a year and a half. At some point, the people of King's Landing see a basically black figure fly above the city. It is Balerion, the Black Dread, who has returned to King's Landing. And on his back is a very, like, emaciated, sickly, injured Princess Arya. It is believed, we're not really sure what happened, but it is believed that Balerion just took the princess to Old Valyria. And there she was injured and infected, whatever, by whatever was remained in Old Valyria. Balerion also had injuries on him that people noted that hadn't been there before. And so our best guess is that she just could not control this large dragon. And Balerion wanted to go home. So he took her home, where, you know, the city was in ruins because of the doom. So she died of her wounds, illnesses. You should read this. Everyone should go and read this chapter in Fire and Blood. It is pretty disturbing, but also it tells us a little bit about the lore of dragons. But to me, this is another example of a dragon not being able to control, I mean, a dragon rider not being able to control their dragon. Because there's no way that this little girl wanted to go to Old Valyria and stay there. I'm sure she tried to get home many times.
Yeah.
What do you think, though, with these three examples, with Dany, Princess Arya, and Alysanne, do you think that and also now we can add Aemon and Vhagar, do you think the issue is inexperienced dragon riders, with the exception being Queen Alysanne and Silverwing, because she was a pretty experienced rider, but the other three, they haven't had these dragons that long?
I'm thinking about this, because I've been thinking about it, and I guess where I kind of am landing is I can't remember is Alysanne Silverwing's first rider, or did Silverwing have a rider before Queen Alysanne?
I think she's the first rider.
That's what I thought.
I think.
Too. let me think. Well, yeah. It was an egg that was placed in the crib of Queen Alysanne. So she was the first rider. So that debunks where I was going with my thought. My thought was that maybe the ability to, but Drogon was also Dany was also Drogon's first rider. So I don't know. I don't really know what it is that gives them their own free will, other than they're living, you know, breathing creatures that have like their own desires and wants, and that we just don't understand them. I think that I think the illusion that Viserys is speaking about is real. Obviously, we've seen that, but then there's so many instances where those folks control their dragon. So we say, like, you know, there's times where you'll say, hey, do this, do that, and they'll do it. Like when they give a command, like Dracarys, like, but think about it. It's like any pet or any, you tell them to do something and sometimes they follow the command, and sometimes they're like, get out of here, I don't want to. You know what I mean? Like, so I don't know. I don't think there's a clear, I don't think the lore gives us a clear answer, and I don't think that we found any real theory that gives us a clear answer as to why they have their own will. But in certain instances, for certain things, they will just change their mind. You know?
Yeah, I had this theory that it had to do with inexperienced writers, but when you think about it, actually, Aemon is not that inexperienced. He's had Vhagar for at least 5 or 6 years at this point in the story, but I also think George leaves in, you know, questioning about the direwolves as well, right? Because in A Clash of Kings, we have this point where Shaggy Dog basically attacks Maester Luwin. And there's like very little that Bran or Rickon or... Actually, I take that back, because in that instance, Rickon didn't necessarily want the dog to attack Maester Luwin, but he was mad at Maester Luwin. And so maybe the issue is it's a subconscious will of the writer. Like, Dany doesn't actually want... Let's just posit this. Dany doesn't actually want to go back to Meereen, because when she gets back to Meereen, she knows that she's going to have to face all the problems that she left. Maybe it's that Aemon actually did want Luke dead. He wasn't intending to kill him, but deep in his heart, he wanted Luke dead. Maybe it was that Alysanne was afraid to go north beyond the wall. She just... It was a more like subconscious feeling. So I think this is an interesting area of dragon lore. And I'd like to see where the show is going to take this, because this is really new. Yeah. This is new stuff. We haven't had new stuff in this world since Fire and Blood came out in 2018. So like, this is interesting lore.
Yeah, we might not get new stuff in this world ever again until finishes these books. I couldn't help it. It was just a wide opening. Sorry, George. Couldn't help it, man. All right. So, dragons aside, this family has some real problems. Like, real problems. And history that continues to follow it. Like, Maegor, I mean, Visenya, too. Like, let's be honest. Maegor and Visenya are like, you know, peas in a pod based on, you know, that being his mommy. What do we think about the history and how this is going to play out for the history of the family, how this has kind of pushed this to this place?
So, Maegor was the great uncle. Is that right? Great great uncle of Daemon and Viserys?
I don't know. I think it's further back than that, isn't it?
So he was Jaehaerys's uncle. Jaehaerys is their grandfather. So I think, I think we're two removes here. So great great uncle. And the show alluded to him a couple of times. One, when Otto was like, Daemon will be another Maegor, which is which is actually how we ended up having Rhaenyra be the heir.
I just rewatched this scene. I gotta say, the ridiculousness of a person calling a small council meeting on the day of the king's wife's funeral and kid's funeral is wild shit. Like, to be like, yo, I hate to call you here, but this is I feel a pressing matter. We need to talk about succession. My guy, nobody's dying tomorrow, as far as I know. We can't do this in the morning tomorrow, top of the morning. Like, give me a night.
I just know. Just one night. It's, Otto is... And this is all driven by Otto's hate of Daemon.
Yeah.
So he calls out Maegor, and I think this is particularly interesting because the Hightowers have a particular reason to hate Maegor.
Yeah.
Because Maegor set aside his wife, who was a Hightower, to marry another wife. And actually, Maegor ended up with a whole lot of wives. I'm gonna be honest with you. Yeah. Like, there was a lot of wives.
And then came back and then rode up into Old Town on dragon back with his new wife and was like, yo, what y'all gonna do about it? Y'all gonna accept me having multiple wives? And then she eventually was like, all right, I guess I can roll with the multiple wives thing. Like, it's kind of wild shit. I understand why they dislike this dude. Like, no question.
You know what I mean? And then he eventually had her killed.
Yeah.
Which was unnecessary. Like, she was basically doing what she was asked, and he had her killed. And so the Hightower family, that would have probably been Otto's great aunt. So not that far removed. Mm-hmm. The Hightower family already has like a very like anti-Targ feeling. And then in addition to that, the Hightowers are based in Old Town, which is also where the Starry Sept is. Now, we've talked in previous episodes, you guys should go back and listen to our preview episodes for season one, about how the High Septon, the faith of the Seven, doesn't meld with meld well with the Valerians, like doesn't meld well with the traditions of the Targaryen family. The notion of marrying brother to sister, uncle to niece, is completely disgusted, like completely disgusting to the faith of the Seven. There have been several uprisings of the basically the faith militant. They have other names. I'm not going to go into all of that, but basically the faith militant against the Targaryen family, in part because of the incest. And so Allison is shown to be very devout on the show. This is another ally that the Hightowers might have.
Yeah.
That, you know, when Daemon and Rhaenyra and Rhaenys and everyone's standing around the table, the painted table, no one brings up the faith. The faith can muster thousands of men in very, very quickly, and has done before to rise up against the Targaryens. Aegon the Uncrowned, who it was King Jaehaerys's older brother, basically dealt with this when he was on his progression through Westeros. He was under siege of the Faith. Maegor had several Faith uprisings. Jaehaerys actually figured out how to calm the faith down, which is why he you know, got his reputation for being the conciliator. But this is a potential new ally for the Hightowers that can, we've seen before in the show, in the original show, can be quite dangerous. And to the, you
know,
crown.
I agree. And it's really an interesting, you know, I really love this take that you brought up, because and this whole angle about some of the motivations that the Hightowers may have in marrying into the family to a king that they think maybe is a little, you know, maybe they do see him as a little weaker than like Daemon or whatever, but they realize that this is kind of like a safety spot because they have dragons based on the previous history where Maegor really kind of taunted them and Visenya kind of taunted them. So it's really, really fascinating, this line that you think about like them having reason to be worried about Daemon being another Maegor, that I don't think we've talked about that much on the show. And I think like it's as much as I'm out on the greens, it does lend itself to the motivations that they have for the moves that they're making, for sure.
And And it's also a good story for them to tell to the small folk, right?
Yeah.
Maegor the Cruel, this is how this man is known. This is even how he's referred to in Game of Thrones. Like, this guy ruled for, I think, 6 years, and that was some of the bloodiest time in all of Westeros. Mm-hmm. His own family didn't rock with him. The Baratheons actually helped, like, overthrow him. Like, it is this... So if they can keep, you know, hitting that drum of Daemon is another Maegor, and look who your heir is married to. That's in addition to the questioning the birth of Rhaenyra's children, this is another tool they can use to undermine the Blacks.
For sure.
And if they have the Faith on their side, woof, that's going to be a hard bell to unring.
Yeah, very interesting. Very interesting angle. We'll see how they play that out. Other family dynamics, I mean, loosely associated to the family. We'll talk about Lady Mysaria, Daemon's whore.
Oh my god, she's dead. Like, they showed her quarters burning. I think she's alive, right?
I think we're asking the wrong question here. I think we're asking the wrong question about whether she's dead or not. I think we need to really ask the main question that we need to know. What accent will she have this season? This is the right question to be asking. Like,
it's true.
Is this going to be a Littlefinger situation where she comes back with a brand new accent, emerges from the flames, not with three dragons, but with a new accent?
I can make another Drake joke here, but I'm not going to. I will show some restraint. I really hope she drops this accent. It's actually just like so distracting. Like, I'm fine.
What is wrong, my prince? What are you? What is happening? I was like, oh god, no.
It's so bad. I hope they drop it. I'm excited to see. Okay, so they showed her playing both sides in season one, which was a little weird because that's not really in the book.
I have a new theory about that. I think I do too, actually, but
I think we should hold that for our spoilers section.
Yeah.
I have a theory about that too, because in rereading the book, I was like, oh, maybe she was. I don't know, but.
This is really.
Is she going to come back and just have Otto as an enemy? Is she going to continue to play both sides? She's also mad at Daemon. Like, the last time we saw this woman and Daemon interact, she was like, "Get out of my house." So, I'm curious about where they're going to take her.
She's mad at Daemon for the same reason she's going to be mad at Otto at this point, and I think that she will lean, in my opinion, closer to the Blacks, is because the one thing that she has said is, like, these guys think they, based on where she's come through, she's used to people treating her a certain way or discounting her, and these people think that they own her and they own her loyalty. And the reality of it is that she's making decisions. The side she's on is Mysaria's side at this point. She's not on anyone's. I think that's where they're making their mistake. Now, that being said, in my rewatch, I picked up on something that I did not pick up the first time. That in the small council meeting that we were talking about that they called that night, Viserys shuts Otto down, and Daemon's back there laughing, but he shuts him down because they're just bickering over it, but also because everything that Otto's talking about, it was Otto's idea to give Daemon all these things, and he just gets pissed off, and he's like, yo, he's my blood. You're not going to, like, make me turn against my blood, and I'm not going to pick against my brother and my daughter. So then the very next scene is him telling him, is Daemon in the pleasure house with Mysaria. And later we find out that Mysaria has been acting as a spy for Otto, but I forgot about that scene that she's the only person who probably, I mean, yes, they were, he corroborated with three other witnesses, but she's probably the person that told Otto about his speech in the brothel. And that is probably what ended up undoing the start of what happened between Daemon and Viserys, which if Daemon would have stayed, maybe some things go a little different as the commander of the City Watch.
Right. But Otto also doesn't know her identity, right? He knows, we find out in the Green Council episode 9, that Otto just knows her as the White Worm. He didn't actually know that Missaria and the White Worm were one and the same, which I also think is very interesting.
Do you think that that's true, or do you think that's just Otto covering his trail?
I think it's true. Like, I think the show is telling us that Otto didn't know who the identity of the White Worm.
Because he does have a very trusted spy when he goes and talks about Rhaenyra again, and then him and Viserys gets pissed and he fires him. You remember he says, she's never let me, this one has never led me astray.
Yeah, it could be though that the information that he's getting from the White Worm has always been good. So yeah. That's why, but he doesn't necessarily know the identity of the White Worm.
That being said, whether he knows who her identity is or not, I think it's Missaria that gave the information, even as the White Worm.
Oh, like, yeah, totally.
That she's the one in the brothel that gives that information, that Otto comes in with his chest out talking about what he said, and which leads to them falling out for the first time. But there wouldn't have been any fallout had that not. And I think that this is, you know, not to belabor it, but I do think that this is kind of what Daemon's point was about how weak his brother was. Like, honestly, listen, man, sometimes you gotta take people as they are that got your back. We're not in the Civil War right now. If he would have just listened to Daemon a little bit more, I'm just being honest, like keeping it real. That's how I feel about it. I hate that that's how it played out. But that's how I feel, that he should have had his brother closer. I'll stand on that till the end, even if his brother's a wild card. Sometimes you need a wild card. If you ain't got that wild card energy, you need somebody with that muscle, that wild card energy to be like, yo, let me tell you how to stay in check real quick. He needed that more than anything.
Yeah, I think if he had kept Daemon closer, Daemon also wouldn't have been so unhinged.
Agreed.
So I agree with you. I guess we just keep an eye on Missaria. I don't really know what they're going to do with her in the show, because they've already veered with her character off book quite a bit.
Yeah.
So I'm very curious as to how this is going to play out, because at some point, so Larys is like the master of whispers right now. Like, at some point, there's going to probably be like a who has better spies off between these two.
Yeah, for sure.
And so I'm curious to see how this plays out. I have some speculation, but obviously we don't know what they're going to do.
Yeah, and I mean, there's something that I think that in the book she plays a heavy role in, but we'll save that for the spoiler.
Yeah, I have more to say. We'll save it for the spoilers.
So as far as dynamics in the family, though, we got.
Like, I think we can, in the interest of time, I think we should focus on just a few of these.
Yeah.
Baela and Rhaena, just off of some of the interviews that we've seen, Rhaenyra and Rhaenys, and that includes, I think Rhaenys and Corlys should be together on that one. And then Team Green, I think we have a lot of interesting family dynamics. It will be interesting to see how they play out. So I wanted to talk a little bit about Baela and Rhaena. There was an interview with one of the actors, and I should have written this down, but I don't remember which one, that stated that there's going to be an interesting dynamic between the two sisters. I'm concerned.
Me too.
I'm concerned. They're supposed to be pretty close, but Rhaena was raised by Daemon and Rhaenyra after her mother passed, and Baela was raised by Rhaenys. And I think it will be interesting to see how that plays out. Like, who, you know, are we going to see personality differences in these two girls? Who, let me just say, I'm so happy that they are putting them front and center.
Yeah, for sure.
In the marketing, in the publicity. These two characters are two characters that George R. R. Martin created and then kind of sidelines in the dance. I love that they're going to be active participants.
He sidelines them in the dance, but they are very, very important to everything post-dance. You know what I mean? Like, and I think anyway, like mid to post.
Totally. Decisions that they make in the dance are important after the dance. So I think, I'm excited to see them play more active roles in the dance. But I think it's also interesting that there's going to be some character development in seeing their personalities get a little bit more attention. Because in the book, Reyna gets almost no love.
Yeah, I agree.
She just gets almost no love. Whereas Bela does get her own, like, a paragraph saying what she's like. She kind of reminds me of Alyssa Targaryen, which was the mother of Viserys and Daemon. Why am I forgetting this man's name? All I've been thinking about is Daemon these last few weeks. And I'm like, what? Who's Viserys' brother? So Alyssa Targaryen was like a crazy dragon rider. She loved to ride her dragons. She was fiery. She spoke her mind. She was devoted to her husband. Like, she was just Bela's given those vibes in the book. So I hope that they give her some of that personality.
Yeah.
But I don't want to see these two fighting. So I hope that that's not what happens.
I mean, there will be they hinted a little bit last season that there'll be a little bit of a rift between them about one of them being a dragon rider and not. And I think that will probably spark, you know, the one to go and get a dragon. You know what I mean? Like, I hope that's as far as it goes. You know what I mean? Like, that's it. I hope that's as far as it goes. I really do. Like, I pray that they don't push any further than that, because they shouldn't be. They were really no, there wasn't really a big falling out. There was never really a big falling out. There was distance, but not a big falling out. So no, I don't know. I think you're right. I agree with you. I land where you land. I do think that Rhaenyra and Rhaenys are going to have some back and forth that are interesting, because Rhaenys is always going to have in the back of her mind that, you know, this was really my seat. You know what I mean? Like, and I think as much as she's going to eventually be there for Rhaenyra and thinks that she's on the right side, I do think there's a weird dynamic, like, between the two of them will remain probably until one of them are no longer here.
Yeah, I totally agree. Rhaenys has got to have some feeling about this, because she was passed over not once but twice. I mean, in the show, I guess it's just that once, but she is the eldest of Jaehaerys and Alysanne's grandchildren, and yet Rhaenyra's father became king, and then one generation later you've got all these people being like, no, a woman can be queen. I mean, it hasn't been that long, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And so I'm sure that's frustrating for her. But then there's also just this question of Laenor that's, I don't think, is settled. You know, I think the show tried to say that Rhaenys takes him at his word, takes her at her word. Rhaenys takes Rhaenyra at her word that she had nothing to do with Laenor's murder. But we got to be on our toes here. That Laenor could pop up again.
Yeah. I mean, it makes sense. It would make sense. It would make sense if they write that in that way. And there's a reason why I think it could make sense if they do it that way. I don't know if that's how they're going to do it, but let's see. Let's see what they do. And then, like, I mean, dynamics on Team Green, I think, are really clear to me in that I think that Aemon and Aegon are going to have a tug pull in their relationship. Aemon is all about the fighting because he just wants to, like, prove his point, and he wants to be on. He believes in what he's doing. I don't think that he believes in Aegon as the king. He actually thinks he should be king. He actually thinks he'd be a better king. So I do think he has, like, I think the dynamic that they thought existed between Daemon and Viserys actually exists between Aemond and Aegon. Like, I think that Viserys was right when he said Daemon doesn't have the patience to be king. He doesn't want the throne. He wants, yes, he's ambitious, but not for that. And I think that he's right on that. I think that that was not Daemon's aim. Daemon would have been happy being the hand. He would have been, as long as he had a part in what his brother was doing. I don't see it the same way for Aemon. I think Aemon only went and got his brother that time because it was what he was told to do. He probably would have been okay for his brother disappearing off the face of the earth.
Yeah, I think he was tempted for sure. But I do want to say I understand a lot of Aemon as a fan favorite. I do not like Aemon.
No.
I do want to say Aemon, from what we've heard from him in the past, he does like value duty to family. So I think you're right that he thinks he would be a better king. And let's be honest, he's probably right about that. Mm-hmm. That he will probably do what he believes is right for the family, even when he's not right about that.
But like, I think the rub there is people still have feelings, though. I think he truly loves, it sounds weird, it's his sister, right? But I think he truly loves Helena. I think and I think he's mad that his brother treats Helena the way. So I think there's a little bit of like, yes, he'll do anything duty for family, but how is he defining that? He may be looking at it as like, yo, you're doing our family dirty. You're not loyal to the family. And now all of a sudden he doesn't see him as a loyal contributor to the family.
Yeah, you're right. That's fair. And also, like, we've seen the dynamic between Allison and Aegon, and it's not good. But the dynamic between Aemon and Allison up to this point, I think Allison's going to lose her shit when he gets back from from going to the Baratheons. I think she's going to be like, WTF, like, why did you do this? But I think you're right that Aemon's going to do, it's in his nature to want to protect his mother and sister.
Yeah, agreed. I agree with that. And I think that Allison is going to lose her shit. And I think Allison is going to have an issue with Aemon taking those steps because she knows what that's going to lead to. There's no more like ravens, as they say in the book, the war of ravens was over and the war of fire and blood began. Like, that is for sure gonna happen. And I think that it's going to put a strain on her and Otto's relationship too. I think that ultimately, I know that Otto's day has passed, you know, in a lot of ways. And I think it's going to become very clear throughout this season how out of step he is. And I think that's going to put him at odds with Allison. It's going to put him at odds with other members of the family. And it's definitely, I think, going to put him at odds with the king.
Yeah, he's already been at odds with Allison. Like, we saw that after she spoke to Rhaenys, she basically read him for filth. Like, she now sees her father not as a person who was doing what was in the best interest of the family, but doing what was in the best interest of himself, of his legacy.
Yeah.
And so he used her. And I don't think that she wants him to use her children in the same way. I mean, all this talk from Otto over the entirety of the season is how Rhaenyra is going to put the children in danger. Rhaenyra is going to do this. She's going to put them to the sword. She's going to auto set up this family to be in danger. Mm-hmm. They could have played this a totally different way. One way to play it was to marry Helena and Jace and be one family, and to push for Rhaenyra being, you know, the heir, and to get behind her and to curry favor amongst the Targaryen family that way. He chose a different route and put his family in danger. And I think Allison is beginning to see that.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that was the best path, honestly. Like, honestly, it was the clearest path to what he wanted ultimately. He may not have lived to see it all, which is part of the problem, is that he really wants the power, right? Like, he wouldn't, but that would have been the clearest path to what he was looking for. Because Helena and Jace, Helena would have went along with Helena and Jace, sir. Yeah, they got along. They were dancing, having a good time. So it would have been fine. I don't know, man. I think Otto is not right to think that the realm... I think there is a lot of misogyny, for sure. And it is a patriarchal society, obviously, by the way they've done the line of succession. You even hear that, even as much as I love Lord Strong in season one, in episode one, he's like, oh, why won't we break with hundreds of tradition by putting a woman on the throne? And you guys are saying you want to stick to tradition. So there's obviously a sentiment there, but I do think ultimately they would have gone with what the king said. And if they didn't put that in the air that, oh, he changed his mind, I think they would have went with that. I think the realm would have went with that.
I mean, we're going to see, right? At some point, Jace is going to return from his trip and he's going to be able to report back. What did Lady Jane say in the Aerie? What did Lord Tully say? Well, I guess Daemon will probably... I think Daemon said he was going to go try to treat with Lord Tully, but...
If by treat you mean bend the knee, the terms are clear, bend the knee or your house will burn, then I guess that is the treat.
I mean, that's how Daemon does stuff.
I know. what a good scene in the trailer.
I think it will be interesting to see what the numbers stack out to be. Like, we know what they were in the book, but... who knows? I do think that I've heard a lot of in the lead up to the show, I've heard a lot of discourse about how, well, Otto's not completely wrong because we have the evidence from the Great Council that the Lords of Westeros chose a man when they had the option to choose Rhaenys. Yes, that's true, but that was so long ago. Yeah. Like, things change. Like, we know in our own society that the notion that, you know, we could have, like, a woman on the top of a presidential ticket was really different 30 years ago. But things change. So I'm interested to see, did the Lords of Westeros change during that time? Did they become more misogynistic? Are they willing to have a woman on the throne? Is it, at the end of the day, will it come down to, well, this is who the king picked? And he never... At no point did the king say, actually, nah, I'm going with Aegon instead. He always stood by that Rhaenyra was the heir. So,
and why do you think he chose Rhaenyra?
I've been thinking about this a lot. I have a new perspective. Full disclosure. A creator on TikTok has changed my entire perspective on Daenerys and Jon. If people want to check her out, she goes by Game of Thrones Historian. She strongly believes that Dany is the fulfiller of all these prophecies, Azor Ahai, that's the role that Dany is going to play in the books, if we ever get the books. many people believe that Jon is all of these things, including Melisandre. She believes that Jon is the Azor Ahai. But something that in my rewatch, I noted was that this story starts out, the very first thing they tell us, this story is before Daenerys Targaryen. And they could have done this differently, right? They could have said, that first title card could have said 172 years before Daenerys Targaryen and Jon Snow. Yeah. But they didn't. Yep. They said before Daenerys Targaryen. And so, to me, if I'm just looking at what's on the screen and thinking about the original books, the Game of Thrones series, A Song of Ice and Fire, Rhaenyra is the one, because Dany has to be the one. And all of this leads into, and it might be that this conflict with Rhaenyra is going to lead to Dany in some way. We don't know how it's going to play. I mean, we know, but we're not going to share how it's going to play out. But all of this to say that, like, in order for Dany to fulfill this prophecy, Rhaenyra has to be the heir. Now, maybe Viserys, the thing about prophecy in George R. Martin's world, and we see this with Rhaegar, is it's not necessarily that Rhaenyra is going to be the ancestor of Dany, or that Rhaenyra being queen is the only way you get to Dany. It might be that from Viserys' understanding, from what he's seen in his dreams and visions, is that this conflict, this making Rhaenyra the heir is the only way that we eventually get to the Targaryen, we get to Aerys and then Rhaegar and then Daenerys. It could be that, right? Because it could just be that this conflict has to happen in order for us to get to Daenerys. But I think that's what we're seeing, is that something told Viserys that he had to take the path not taken and name Rhaenyra. And maybe that's because this conflict will lead to a line of Targaryens that will eventually lead to Daenerys. Or maybe it is that Rhaenyra's own line will lead to Daenerys. But I think the way that prophecy works in George's world is that trying to affect a prophecy changes the nature of it. You can actually cause another conflict that might seem like you're diverting, but in the end, the prophecy might still bear out. So that's where I'm at right now of it. And maybe that will change. But that's where I'm feeling right now, that actually Dany is the Song of Ice and Fire, not necessarily Jon. So we'll see. I might be wrong. I'm just saying.
I mean, they could both be the Song of Ice and Fire, but she could still be Azor Ahai. I mean, because I think like that makes sense, because she has no ice at all. Dany is all fire. Like, she is fire all the time. You know what I mean? So, but I don't think that. I agree with you. I think.
But if the others are ice,
huh?
If the others
are ice,
maybe yeah. Dany doesn't need to be ice. We'll see how. We'll see. I think Jon definitely has a role to play. I'm just wondering, like, the show had a choice here. I think most of the audience has seen the original show. So they could have very well said 172 years before Jon Snow and Daenerys Targaryen, but they didn't. They focused on Dany.
I 100% agree with that take. I agree that this is, I don't think this is Jon's story. I mean, it doesn't really seem like it. You know what I mean? Like, honestly, like, it seems like, yeah, I don't know. It's, I mean, there's parts of it that we'll see how the book ends, but obviously he lives and rides off into the northern cold. I have no idea what the hell we're supposed to gather from that. But I do think that a lot of your points, I rock with that as well. Like, I think that she's, I mean, there's a lot that I know that I'm struggling not to say because we're not hit the spoiler section yet.
But we're about to.
Yeah. So yeah, but I agree. I like that take, and I like that creator. Like, that you turned me on to her too, and I like her a lot. She's on it. So all right. So let's now, folks, we are transitioning. If you are uninterested in hearing spoilers about things that are in the books that we are projecting about may happen in this coming season, things that you have not happened yet on House of the Dragon season one, but we want to talk about because they have happened in Fire and Blood, then now's the time. Give yourself a second, turn it off, and we will then go into our spoiler section.
Yeah.
Okay.
So just creating more time here. But we will be back with a regular coverage of the season. So, we won't be going away for too long, but yeah, exit now. Okay, you feel like they're gone?
I feel like they're gone, and we'll be back next week. If you're still listening, we'll be back next week with the first coverage of the first episode of this season. So yeah, we're not going long at all. So let's go.
All right, now that the non-book readers or people who are spoiler adverse are gone, let's get into it. I'm struggling, man.
I'm son for a son. They kicked it off with a son for a son. We already know what that means. We know that blood and cheese is on the horizon. Like, let's talk about blood and cheese. Like, how are people going to react to that? The act of killing a child on screen.
I'm of two minds about this. So, just in case there's any lingering folks who actually either don't remember this from the books or are didn't read the books and just like spoilers, because there's a whole contingent of people like that too. Blood and Cheese is a retribution for Lucerys's death. We believe it to be ordered by Daemon, in cahoots with Missaria. where a former member of the City Watch and a rat catcher break into Allison's apartments and murder Prince Jaehaerys.
Yeah.
Is that his name? I think it's Jaehaerys.
Yep.
Uh-huh. And it's a really horrible scene in the book. Now, in the show, Helena's only been shown to have two children who in the books are twins, Jahera and Jaehaerys. Jaehaerys is the heir to Aegon, so it's his oldest son. But in the book, she has a third child, which is Maelor. When Blood and Cheese break into Allison's apartment, Helena's bringing the children by to say goodnight to grandma, and they essentially hold them against their will, capture them, and make Helena choose which son, a son for a son.
And which she son? Begs, she begs for them to kill her, and I believe in the book, also Allison is in the apartments, and so,
yeah, Allison's there first. Yeah. They actually sees her first, and then Helena and the children enter.
Yeah, and so like they beg for them to kill them, and he says that's not the deal, a son for a son, and then she chooses not the heir, not Jaehaerys, she chooses
Maelor. She chooses Maelor,
and
which is horrible, but I think partially because he's only like one or two, like she figures he won't know, and they kill the elder instead.
Yeah.
And these are little kids. I mean, this season starts approximately 10 days after the last season ended. So these children have not grown. These are little kids.
Yeah.
It's horrible.
They're saying Jaehaerys is supposed to be six. That's crazy.
They're not even close to that. Yeah,
not in the show, for sure.
Enough, yeah. These kids look like they're maybe three and four.
Yeah, exactly.
It is actually horrible. It is one of the hardest. Look, when I read the books, I had a very rough reaction to the Red Wedding. But this is something else, right? This is a child.
Yeah.
And I'm skeptical about how an audience is going to react to this, especially that it's the first episode.
And how accurate will they show this as well? Because one of the things that I thought was the most haunting to me when I read the book was they ask her to choose. She chooses the son that's the youngest so that she doesn't have to, so that they can keep the heir, which was hard for her to do in the first place. And yes, they kill the oldest, but before they kill the oldest, they turn to the younger Maelor and say, "You hear that, little boy? Your mommy wants you dead." And so now they're haunting this little boy's memories, like, "Hey, your mother actually chose for you to die." So they don't only take a son; they legitimately probably take both, but one psychologically, one physically. You know what I mean? And it's really rough.
It's horrible, and I'm already dreading watching it.
Yeah.
So we'll see how the audience reacts to something. This is, I mean, listen, Game of Thrones also killed a child, right? They killed the baby, Robert's baby.
Yeah.
But I hope this is off screen.
They also killed. They also sliced up a pregnant woman. So it was really,
which. When that happened, because that doesn't happen in the books, Talisa is not a character in the books. But when that happens, Rob's wife is not even at the Red Wedding, so which is very suspicious, very sus. but she's not even there. And so for me, as a book reader who knew this horrible scene was going to happen, I was emotionally prepared for it until that part. Until they stabbed a pregnant woman in her belly. It was just awful. So I hope the audience can handle this. There's no way around it. It's like a really important event. Yeah, so it's not like they could have just written this out.
No, they can't. It's too big. It's too big of a part of like how this really goes to the next level in conflict and what it does to Helena, what it does to Aegon,
Allison. What it does to
Daemon, Allison, everybody. Yeah. It's too big of a deal. And to be completely honest, it is obviously nothing that that I support, I also, it's the one time that I'm kind of like, and I think Rhaenyra's going to have this response, that I'm kind of like, Team Black, come on, man. Like, honestly, like, they could have taken Daemon, like, right? A son for a son. The right thing would have been sneak in there and kill Daemon. You know what I mean? Like,
you mean Aemon?
I mean, Aemon. They could have killed Aemon. The son for a son would have been like, let's kill Aemon. Or sneak in and kill the king. Then there's nobody on the throne. Like, there was a lot of ways to go about this other than killing a child. You know what I mean? So.
And I just, I'm curious how the show is going to play this, because in the book, Rhaenyra is so adverse to kinslaying.
Yeah.
That I have a hard time thinking that she agreed to this in advance. I think she had to live with it afterwards. I feel like the show is going to be like, is going to lean into this, is going to have Rhaenyra be fully aware this is going to happen.
Yeah, they could. They definitely could. She seems like she's ready for. She was pissed at the end of the season, so it's definitely
possible. Totally. If they play it that her grief is such that this seems like a totally reasonable thing, I think the audience will go along with that. So we'll see. But I hope the audience can rock with this, because I've had many friends who quit Game of Thrones for much less.
Yeah.
So.
It's going to be an interesting moment of television for sure. They're going to be talking about this for that week. Here's my question. And it's a question we thought about all last year. We haven't brought it up because we weren't in this kind of stage of the game yet. History does repeat itself. So maybe that's the story George is telling. But I think that this show is going to have it's what you've dubbed the Daenerys Targaryen problem. Like, what?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, Rhaenyra starts off huge advantage, more dragons, more allies. Everything's going her way. She's got the Aerie. She's got the North. She's got pretty much everything. Massive navy. And they also choose not to go into King's Landing because they don't want to burn the city down. Even though they have a dragon, you know, they say, well, Vhagar is like, you know, multiple dragons, so you can't like rule her out. I just wonder how the audience will feel as this starts to spiral for Rhaenyra after what we experienced with Dany.
It's like, even reading the book, you're like, actually, how does she lose this?
Yeah.
Because she's got more dragons, and in the show, she has even a bigger advantage because Dreamfire is not really a player here.
Yeah.
Like, first of all, Helaena gets sidelined really quickly after what happens with Blood and Cheese. But secondly, Helaena and Dreamfire, I don't see Helaena as some like great dragon rider. Like, we just, the notion that Dreamfire is going to get up in the air and battle off another dragon when she has no history of doing that. Mm-hmm. Then they took off the board what the most likable green, Prince Daeron.
Yeah.
Who has the dragon called Tessarion, a she dragon that is both beautiful but like formidable. I just don't.
I have a real problem with that. I just don't. I still don't understand how Prince Daeron is not in this show at all. And I gotta believe that he's not, because they, based on what they've said about the dragon math that Daemon uses, they'd have to just not even know that this prince existed, in which would make no sense. And so it's just weird to me, like that he's missing. And I think that, you know, like you said, he played a pivotal role in some of the battles.
He shows up, like, surprisingly in a bunch of other battles. Like, he's just, we're meant to forget about him. But, like, the fact that Daemon doesn't seem to know he exists is a problem.
You think he shows up out of the blue? And everybody's like, oh, my God, where'd this dragon come from? Do you think they're going to do the surprise thing?
It's possible. It's possible, even though we have no casting announcement, that he will show up at some point, and that Nettles, who eventually rides Sheepstealer, will also show up. But I think right now we have to assume that they're not on the board. And Nettles is not a huge loss for Team Black. I think she personally is as a character, but like in terms of the dragon math, that's not that big of a loss. But Daeron is a huge, 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 huge loss for Team Green.
I think Nettles is a loss only in the fact that this ends up eventually leading to a huge rift between Daemon and Rhaenyra, right?
Like, yeah.
And I think like that's where the issue is that she becomes so jealous some of the actions she takes. So I think like that's the thing. But I think that severs their relationship. So I don't know. I think like she's important there, but yeah, I think you're right. Daeron is a way bigger loss for the Greens based on the dragon math that we have on the show, for sure.
Yeah. I don't know why this decision was made. Like, now that one thing I love about this show and the experience of watching the show is just that these were all just names to me, and now they're real people.
Yeah.
So I don't know this, but I totally agree with you. I think this is going to be rough because they are going to have the same issue that Daenerys had at the end of season 6, which is how the fuck does she lose?
Yeah.
How does she lose this? She's got 3 dragons, House Martell, the Iron Fleet, House Tyrell. Like, how does Daenerys not come back? How does Cersei and Jaime defeat them? Like, it just doesn't make any sense. And now, obviously, they had the plot with the others that, you know, got rid of Viserion, got rid of, like, reduced the Dothraki's numbers and the Unsullied numbers. But, like, I don't know. We'll see.
I guess that's the part that boggles my mind, right? It's like okay, here, let's Rhaenyra dies, right? And that's you could argue that she ultimately wins the war because her child ends up sitting in the Iron Throne. Her and Daemon's child ends up sitting in the Iron Throne. But then the problem with that is that if that's supposed to keep the line going all the way until eventually Dany ends up coming and doing what she does, if she is in fact Azor Ahai like we're talking about. But the way that ends, at least on the show, we don't know how the book's going to end, the way the show, then it's like, well, why did these two people meet the same fate, and what was the outcome that was positive of this, that, I don't know, the three-eyed raven becomes the king, and, you know, and Tyrion is like the hand? Like, that doesn't save the realm. Did that save the realm? I don't know. There's a dragon still just flying around. So it almost feels like, why are we watching? That's the part that I'm worried about. I'm worried about the most about this portion of it is, and part of the reason why I was like, to everyone's chagrin, I was like, no, we need the Jon Snow show. We don't need the Jon Snow show. I just need I need to know what happens 20 years after all the events of Game of Thrones. That's what I need to know. I don't care about the Jon Snow show. That's fine if he never comes back again. I just really need to know what happens after we end with the Song of Ice and Fire.
Yeah, I agree. I know that would be the only value of that show. Because I have no desire to see this man's face ever again.
Yeah, he did kill the queen. So
he killed the queen. Yeah. We'll see how this plays out. I mean, I think the story that George is telling is that Rhaenyra had a huge advantage that got squandered because of her relationship with Daemon. And because she became increasingly more paranoid. And so, sure, that's a good story, but it's going to be pretty unbelievable if they don't really sell that piece of it, that she could lose this.
Yeah, I just don't. I mean, besides just on top of it being unbelievable, I think just getting a little meta, you're trying to keep people in this whole universe and launch other shows, and you got like, you know, the Night of the Seven Kingdoms coming. I just find it hard to like watch again, get all built up, and then like know that, you know, it's going to be a similar, it's not the same end, but it's going to be it's going to be a far worse end, honestly, than Dany, but it's still a similar end that like, you're like, damn, like this person who we were rooting for is now gone. You know what I mean? Like, why? Why did we watch this? So I wonder if the audience is going to have that feeling. You know what I mean? That doesn't know. That just watches the show.
Yeah, I'm curious to see, because I think the one good thing about this is that they can actually show Rhaenyra kind of losing it.
Yeah.
Which we never really got with Dany.
Yeah, it's fair. All right. Well, here we go. We're back. We're in Westeros. Get ready. We will be here. We will be covering House of the Dragon season 2 every episode. And yeah, we're looking forward to it. It's going to be a fun time. Happy to be back in Westeros with you. And if you want to reach out, hit us up on kinfolklore@gmail.com, kinfolklorepod on Twitter and or Facebook. And we will see you next week.
Bye, everyone.